Good morning on this Saturday, March 18th, 2017, meeting of the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission. We have a full morning's agenda, and we will kick her off with item number 18, open public input. We have a half dozen or so. Again, I think most of you have done this before, but those of you that haven't, 3 minutes, the buzzer goes off. Bring your thoughts to a conclusion, and that'll be it. And I'm going to call you up two at a time, please. So Greg King and Jason Lake. The nice lake, we could say.
So who goes first?
No, Greg, you go first. Yeah.
Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning, Chair Smith, Director Unsworth. My name is Greg King, and I represent Friends of the Calhoun CCA and the Calhoun Ad Hoc. As I sit here today in front of the Commission, I ask, what are you thinking spending $1 million on reintroducing wolves and grizzly bears? We can use that money to rebuild hatcheries, restore runs of hatchery fish, and create opportunity for sportsmen. Do you realize orca whales are dying in the Puget Sound from lack of Chinook salmon and pollution? It just goes to show you how important hatcheries are. Feed the whales. It also been stated that hatcheries are a valuable tool in recovery of wild fish, but you love to shut them down. Yes, hatcheries are the number one cost of WDFW, but if WDFW would create good hatchery runs, sportsmen would pay for that opportunity. Let's also not forget sportsmen bring in millions of dollars to the local communities every year, some in your own backyards. Let's not forget Jim Scott's statement in 2006 that one sports caught steelhead is worth $1,000 to the local communities. Let's also not forget that we have been releasing wild fish in southwest Washington and Puget Sound since 1984. That's 33 years. Please show me where we've had any recovery of wild fish. I don't think you can, because it's not happening. The problem is not hatcheries or the Ebor hatchery fish. It's clean water, habitat, dams, and years of overharvest. So please stop with this wild fish fantasy and use the tools you have to raise some hatchery fish. And for God's sakes, let's stop this attitude that sportsmen are less than because we don't have a fancy piece of paper hanging on our wall. What sportsmen have is common sense. We believe that is what is lacking at WDFW. And please stop this liberal agenda of big agency and little opportunity for sportsmen. And let's all work together to make sports fishing great again in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions from the commission? No. Two at the table at the same time. This is getting dangerous, Bob. Jason, but you're going to go before your dad, so.
Okay. Good morning, Fish and Wildlife Commission, Chairman Smith, and fellow commissioners. I'm Jason Lake, and I represent Wild Salmon for All. This is a company that is focused on conservation of natural and wild Chinook salmon. We are here to inform the Commission of our mission to assist the Department in removing hatchery Chinook with minimal impact to unmarked natural Chinook salmon. This will help the Department in achieving the PHAS levels that are required by the 21st Century Washington State Salmon Initiative. Our plan is to utilize a fish trap that is fish friendly. This means that handling any unmarked salmonoids would be kept to a minimum. I have redesigned a fish trap that will allow unmarked salmonoids to be released without handling them. WSFA and the Wild Fish Conservancy have been working together on alternative gear projects. We see the future, but we need enough time and fish to properly utilize the fish trap and control the PHAS. We plan on hiring local commercial fishers and training them on how to handle and release fish in the best possible way. This will help to replace some of the impacts that have hurt our local economies. We also plan on paying landing, excise taxes, and contributing to regional fisheries enhancement groups. The fish trap was very successful at harvesting salmon in a number of areas and rivers throughout the state until they were banned in 1936. We need to be operating and testing the trap by August 1st, 2017 to minimize the impacts on natural Chinook. This would allow us to harvest prime viable Chinook salmon to be sold to local to the local citizens of Washington State, as well as recoup our expenses and operating costs. What we need from you, the commission, is direction to DFW employees to secure any and all necessary permits and a contract with Wild Salmon for All by April 15th, 2017. Thank you, Jason Lake, CEO, Wild Salmon for All.
Thank you, Jason. Yes.
I read some of the emails that you sent out. Thought that was educated. Have you engaged with the department staff as far as any engineering drawings or any conceptual stuff, or with the biologists? What kind of where does that stand in the process, Jason?
We've had a couple internal meetings so far. I have made a model of the trap for the Willapaw. We have got the pound net set up in Cathalamet that's been there for a couple of years. We've got test stuff up in Canada right now, but the Willapaw is a unique one because of different sizes and different flows and different areas and stuff. So it's a little bit different, but there is a model made, and we just need time to get it. You know,
this is obviously a business venture. Are you calling this a pilot project, or is this just a we're going to go forward? I just want to understand a little bit.
We want to go forward with it.
And this is the same project that the Wild Fish Conservancy had, they were running for a bit, right?
No, this is a different, this is a partnership that I formed.
Okay.
This is a whole separate deal. Wild Fish Conservancy is a nonprofit. Wild Salmon for All is a profit company.
But didn't they have a test?
Yes, they have a test.
A pound net
on the Columbia, yeah.
And you're doing a fish trap with leads.
A fish trap on the Willapaw, and we're just being supported by Wild Fish Conservancy and working in partnership to, you know, because it's all about the salmon here and going within the.
Yes. I decided to come and bring this idea forward. I don't want to steal Bob's thunder, but I did want to get a sense of the location. Are we talking NEMA Channel or Nacelle, both?
Chad has, you know, we've heard different things from different staff, and where our idea is above, if it's in the Willapaw, above the 101 bridge, so it'd be out of any gill netting areas where there would be fishery.
So you're talking about the Willapaw River?
Okay. Right above the 101 bridge, or right above, right there at the upper deadline in the NEMA, or right there at the upper deadline in the Nacelle. Right there, actually, in front of Chadwick and Sensi's house. And I've already got the approval from Chadwick and Sensi, talked to them, and they said that's a great idea.
Well, not approval in
any
kind of formal sense. They don't have the authority.
Their personal opinion.
Yeah. Okay. A lot of conversation needs to take place, yes. Obviously. But I can tell you that there's openness on the sport fishers' side, who I've talked with. You know, Jason and Bob have raised the concept of allowing the commercial fishery earlier than our policy calls for now. And that's going to be a hard sell to the sport side, but they're staying open-minded at this point. And our policy does call for providing incentives for the development of more selective commercial fisheries. So I am encouraging this. I look forward to hearing what Bob has to say.
But yeah, not Jason still.
So perhaps this is a question for you. We had some surplusing in the Willapaw last year, as I recall. Was it the Willapaw River? It was Coho. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Not sure, Bob. I thought it was Coho.
Well, we have surplus coho every year, but if you'd like me to go?
Well, I'm just...
If you can answer.
Okay, we had surplus Chinook also, and we had surplus coho, but the good thing on a surplus Chinook last year out of the Fort Schwick hatchery on the Willapa, well, he was able to backfill to the NEMA who didn't meet their escapement goals. Okay. So it worked out that way, and they're able to switch the fish back and forth. And since the genetic stock is all the same on the whole bay, there's not a problem there on the Chinook. Hope that answered your question.
Eileen Levy, please. And now, Bob.
Okay. I was going to read a letter from the Fish Conservancy, Wildfish Conservancy, of support in this project. You have it in your packet. It was passed out. And I'm sure you guys can read it yourselves and understand it. But I think it's a good start because their support, if in fact we can make this work and take those surplus fish out. The other thing that Jason didn't mention, we're trying to keep it to a minimum because I know we only have 3 minutes, but if we get in there and harvest those fish, we can actually get a very good price out of those fish because they're early. And with the Fish Conservancy, they're marketing fish through different outfits, you know, and they're doing real well off the pound or the reef nets and Puget Sound and all that. So it's a win-win, but not only that, but if we can prove this works, we could actually turn the production back up in the hatcheries to where they used to be because we can keep that PHAS level down. When the fish return, we have viable fisheries for the recreationals and the commercials. That's the whole point of this. And this is another point that we really need to address is we don't want to take any impacts away from the commercial fisheries by these fish traps, and that's why we recommended they be out of the gillnet areas, just above the bridge. That would take special work on your part. And also, but I know this because of the policy and the commercial fishing part, south end of the bay was September, not, we couldn't fish prior to September 6th, and the north end of the bay, the Willapa side, we couldn't fish there until September 16th. So, but the thing is, we want to get in there and get those early fish. And the best part about it, the more of those early fish we take out, the males come first. The biggest percentage are. That's when they show up. They're good prime fish, and it'll be a good test. But we have to be in there. And then the other, here's a real important thing. If we go in early, our impacts on natural spawners or wild fish, whatever, you know, but are actually natural spawners around marked ones, our impacts are a lot less at that time frame because the actual unmarked fish show up later on in September, after the second week of September. That's when their levels go way up. So it was just a win-win is what we're trying to say. But we know we had to come to the commission because of the policy issue, period. That's why we're here this morning. So any questions?
Thank you, yeah.
Go ahead, Kim.
So when a fish is caught in one of these, is it possible to return a natural origin alive?
Oh, yes. I'll say this for Jason. He designed a fish trap. The model's about this long, about that wide, and about that high total. It's on pontoons. It's all mobile. He's been fishing since he was 2 years old. So, you know, he's been around the water all his whole life. And he did a heck of a job on this model that he built. And in fact, it's sitting on my dining room table right now. But the best part is, no, these fish funnel in. They come into the trap, and they get in there, and they can't get back out. It's set up a lot like the hatchery situations are, the same concept. And they'll go in, they'll funnel into that. They can't turn around. They could, if they was really intelligent, they might be able to get sneak back out, one out, you know. But you get in there, and you look what you got, and if you've got all hatchery fish, you can go ahead and dump them right into the you know, kill them and knock them in and put them in the ice tote. But if they're unmarked fish, you can turn around. You got it figured out real well. And it's all live. When I say live, the bottom will lift and come up. So you can see what you've
got. So there's minimal handling.
You don't handle them. We won't touch them at all. This is the best part. There's absolutely zero handling of the fish.
Like reef netting.
Yeah, unless the people in biologists in the department wanted to tag fish for research or whatever and find out what's going on. Otherwise, we would have no reason to handle them.
Fairly interesting. I guess a couple of questions I'd have is, do you have a business plan? That's Is that available?
We're working on it. Oh, yeah, he's already set up the LLC and the whole works and working on the total business plan.
I don't know who to ask this question of. I think probably Ron or the director. Procedurally, based on the steps that you have to go through within the agency, and I don't know what other environmental or unrelated intergovernmental processes that you need to follow. Is the timing that they're seeking, is that doable for this year?
Commissioner Carpenter, thank you. We're working on that. They approached us. We've been talking for the last 6 months or six weeks, couple months recently. Prior to that, we've been talking for a couple of years with different strategies and different ideas. We're working hard to try to evaluate all of the steps that we need to take. I don't believe that we fully have a scope of that right now, but we're working hard on that. We would have to and are considering what changes to the policy that might be needed. Certainly rule changes are required to change catch areas where they would want to place the gear type. We're trying to evaluate that and the effects, if they're there. Fair enough, they do take, are directed to take hatchery origin returns out of the system, and that's going to have some effect on the rest of the fisheries that are occurring. But overall, we need to have some type of tool like that to be able to maintain hatchery production and meet the goals and objectives by the HSRG that were adopted by the commission.
I was just thinking, you know, we've run into a couple issues up in the north end in years past of trying to come up with some new thoughts, and unexpected impasse we ran into was one of the rivers we were talking about was a navigable waterway, and so the Coast Guard just put the red flag up, and I assume legally that Willapa is a navigable waterway, and what kind of impediments would we run into there, if any?
Yep, and those are the types of situations we're looking into.
Working on that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Is there a proviso under a pilot run that we could start something, and then as we initiate all the other processes?
There are different avenues that we are exploring to see what the fine-tuning is of that, both through the legal counsel and enforcement on how we're going to introduce the fishery or the fishing method that we would employ in the Willapa.
Is what Commissioner Wecker said, which is true for all of us. We did, incentives were part of, you know, and I think this, on first blush or second blush, seems like a good incentive idea.
And thank you, Chair Smith. We too think that it's got definitely the possibility of being the incentive or the trigger, and we're excited to see it in operation and test it. We just have a lot of I's to dot and T's to cross.
Thank you. Any other?
That private entrepreneurs investing in a business, they have to have some expectation of a return on their investment. But when we get in the business of providing guarantees, we run into problems that this particular enterprise is going to have a certain return. So it's complicated. There's ways to skin that cat, but it's kind of, it's tricky. You've got to figure out how to do it.
The second part of my question is the red tape or bureaucracy we got to get through, is it achievable for this, the request of April potentially for these gentlemen?
That's going to be very difficult. Our regional staff, as well as Special Assistant to Director Jim Scott, have been working on this and looking into it, as most of my time has been spent on North Falcon recently. So we're doing our best. It's going to be a very difficult timeline to achieve, but we're trying to at least have all the ducks in a row. I would imagine that even if we could come in later than that, but give some assurances at that time, that may be acceptable, but I have not yet talked to Mr. Lakes, either one of them, so about
that.
Thank
you. Thank you.
And I would also want the advisors to be part of this process, because in thinking about this concept, where you locate it is going to make a lot of difference in the resistance, the outrage, the degree to which we're reversing our policy if we went that direction. So location matters tremendously. Then the other part of it that's going to be a little tricky is that if you guys are successful mopping up a lot of these hatchery Chinook at the mouths of these rivers, what happens to the freshwater anglers, the recreational fishers that don't have boats? They're just not going to have many fish to fish on. And we're only talking about Chinook here. We're not talking about, because Coho and Chum are already overwhelmingly going to the commercial fishery. That was part of our deal, that Chinook would be primarily a recreational fish, and Coho and Chum would be the commercial fish. So upsetting and changing that allocation is going to, you know, that would be a serious reversal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Commissioner Wecker, I understand that, but I think we've got, and I mentioned this, I think, at the last meeting, too, we've got conservation, right, which is paramount.
Right.
And this is a conservation measure, as I understand it, I mean, to remove hatchery fish. So I understand, I mean, you know, in terms of the commitment we've made to our recreational folks through the policy. However, conservation, sound stewardship of fish and wildlife, that's our number one mandate, as I see. So I'm a little bit kind of sensitive when I hear, I mean, hopefully we can achieve a balance, but, you know, I think this is what we've asked our folks to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I'm a little bit nervous in hearing some of these kind of qualifiers, but we'll let this play out, and I'd be anxious for the Lakes to report back and let us know.
We have another.
Baba, and, you know, one of the points they raise is the challenge with PHAS, and it's a challenge that we face not only in the Willapa, but in many other areas. And we're looking for alternatives to solve that problem. And so I'm pleased to see there's some efforts being made to test some viable fisheries, and I'm encouraged by it. And as you mentioned, that's a serious issue with conservation. And if we can find effective and efficient methods to sort our wild from hatchery fish, it's going to benefit not only the Willapa, but other fisheries as well.
And there again, being the drylander, this all sounds very intriguing to me. It truly does. And I guess the only thing that I'm looking at and listening to is it's a pilot. So I would think that the department would need to reserve the right to be able, and there again, not to imply anything, guys, by any shape, because you're being forthright, honest, very open and candid, but to be able to go over and inspect what is going on at, you know, most any time, you know, so that if questions arise, oh, Lakes are out doing this or Lakes are out doing that, that we can stand there with a surety saying, no, we're inspecting them on a regular basis. These guys are upright and not sneaking fish off and that kind of stuff.
Everything will be video monitored, so you can hop right on a computer and click right on it and see what's going on live video.
Well, and that's why I say I think it's protection for both sides. I truly do, but I just wanted to bring it up. Thank you.
Any other? I forgot. Did you have your 3 minutes?
No.
Okay. I got lost in the process. All right. Then you get, what? Oh, yes. You still don't get them.
This is an intriguing idea, but I would like to also acknowledge Commissioner Wecker's concern. It's a concern for me of river fishermen. And they're people I do care about a lot that stop after their stint at the mill and try to catch a hatchery fish to take home. So I do want to make sure that we are considering their needs.
All right. Now,
thanks for thank you, Commissioner.
You're too confusing for Saturday morning.
Anyway, answer a couple of real quick questions that arose. Yes, by the Coast Guard standards, you cannot block the channel completely. We can make allowances to figure out some way to pass boats through if that's what they want to do. But the thing is, we tried to look at places we could put it that would not interfere with the recreational fishers. There's access to a boat ramp on the one on the Willapa River is right below where we're talking about putting it. It's between where we're going to put it and the 101 bridge. And so there's a boat ramp there, and then there's also another one up the river about a mile and a half. So there's access, they can go back and forth. But on the same token, and as Jason said, he's going to use like the VHF monitoring they do on the ocean boats, on the drag boats and that. So that can be looked at any time. And also, we've talked to people in the department in Region 6, and they turned around and they want to be involved in it, make sure everything's scope and setting. We don't have a problem with that. So, because we want the fish that we will be able to retain, we want to make sure they're a good prime fish and taken care of properly. Because we're looking at a different market here. You know, we're looking at a real select market. So it's a real handoff, and it helps us in that respect. And like Jason spoke to, we're going to pay the landing tax on the fish. So the more money we get for those fish, the more landing tax the state gets. And on top of that, then we'll take care of the regional enhancement group for what we've taken out. And I'm sure we're going to more than pay what the American Canadians paying for the carcasses now. And like I say, and those early males are the real prime fish, and that's the ones we would like to get out to start out with. So, and with that being said, Jason sent me a note up that he's going to email you the pictures of the fish trap. So you'll get that. And then, it's a win-win, because when you get somebody like Wild Fish Conservancy behind you that supports this whole concept, that takes a lot of pressure off of the department and you people too, you know. So if it does work, it'll work all over the state. But and the control part, I completely agree with Commissioner Holzmiller that, yeah, we need to keep it right up front. And we're not going to be fishing 24 hours a day. We've got to figure it out. There's only parts of the tide that we can fish. So because of the way it's set up and the whole works. So you got any more questions, I'll be happy to answer them for you. But I know you guys got a busy day today. I know that Willapa issue won't be much.
Well, thanks, Bob.
Hey, thank you, guys.
And thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
And Sean and Eileen.
Shall I begin? May I begin?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
My name is Eileen Levee. Good morning. I'm a landowner in Klickitat County. I have ranch land there and farming in Clark County. And I'm here not about fish, but about wolves, and got interested in the subject this summer, obviously, with all of the activity. I've only been to a couple of the WAG meetings, one in Issaquah, one more recently here in Olympia, and there will be another one forthcoming in this later this month. So I think I'm going to keep my powder dry today and just withhold any comments until I learn more. But I just wanted to introduce myself and say, who is that woman sitting in the front row? Thank you.
Mike Peterson, please. And Sean.
Good morning. Sean Cantrell, Defenders of Wildlife. I am here to talk about wolves as well. I will not keep my powder dry. It'll be sopping wet by the time I'm done. I won't steal the thunder of Donnie's presentation that will brief you on the wolf counts and other activities. I just will say that the numbers are very encouraging. As a WAG member, as a wolf advocate, I am very pleased to see, despite all the turmoil that has taken place, particularly last summer around Profanity Peak Pack, the wolf numbers are still increasing, which is very encouraging, particularly the breeding pairs, which is really the key metric, because if we don't have the breeding pairs, we never get to delisting, we don't get to a healthy population. So that those are all very encouraging. It's also, I think Donnie will share with you, the huge progress we're seeing in the real positive direction on the increased use of the conflict prevention tools by a large number of livestock producers. Huge growth, I think it's 89% is what they're projecting this coming summer compared to what was done last year on the number of livestock producers who are using contract range riders, entering into agreements with the state for conflict prevention. So that's all extremely encouraging. The one area of concern, I don't know how much Donnie will go into it, so I'll just highlight the fact that we have three recovery areas, and one of them has no confirmed wolves in it yet. And if we're ever going to get to recovery, we need to make sure that we get wolves south of I-90, down into the Southern Cascades and the Olympic Peninsula region. I won't speculate as to exactly what's causing the problems, why the wolves haven't gotten south of I-90. There's lots of potential ideas, but I don't think there's good real science to say exactly what's going on. Hopefully they will cross over that barrier and disperse and set up packs and breeding pairs in that area, but that's the biggest unknown or still big hurdle to highlight. As far as the WAG, I just wanted to let you know, as the first person a moment ago said, that there's another meeting coming up. We've set a goal for ourselves, and the department has set a goal for us, I guess I should say, of having our recommendations for updating the protocol by the end of the day on March 30th. We've got a lot of work. It's a big challenge. I'm cautiously optimistic that we will come up with our consensus recommendations, but that's something that you'll probably want to hear about in the April meeting, because it remains contentious, and I think the folks are committed to working together to make it work, but it's going to be challenging. And then my last thought is asking all of you, either collectively or individually, to use your influence with the folks across the street and the legislature to try to make sure that the resources keep flowing for the department to be able to support this conflict transformation process, to provide the funding for those cooperative agreements that are getting livestock producers out there doing the conflict prevention work. So, collectively, I know that as a body, you clearly support the department's recommendations, but several of you probably have good connections with individual legislators, and you passing that word on would be really helpful.
Thanks, John. Thank you. We did speak about this with the governor the other day, and it was a very encouraging conversation.
Great. Thank you.
Also, we met your new staff member yesterday, and he spoke highly of you. He did a good job.
He reported back that you gave him a hard time. Specifically the chair, Smith.
Yeah, well, it's the dean in me.
Okay, and I need to preface this that I'm joking, but I'm sure if you want some wolves south I-90, there'd be plenty of people willing to help.
At some point, there's actually a serious conversation to be had around translocation. At this point, I know there's a number of commissioners in Northeast Washington who are explicitly asking for translocation to be evaluated. My organization is open to that conversation. It's a long SEPA process, et cetera. But if, in fact, we still see a year, 2 years from now, no confirmed wolves in that area and continued growth in the other two regions, I think we need to have a serious conversation about it. But your comments, well noted, both the serious as well as the joking aspect of it. Thank you all.
Thank you, Sean. And Mike, you have the last for this agenda item.
Thank you, and thanks for allowing me to speak today. I'm Mike Peterson. I'm the executive director of the Lands Council. We're a conservation group based in Spokane, Washington, and we've been working in northeastern Washington for over 30 years. And so I also want to talk a bit about wolves more from a perspective of a group who has members who see wolves, interact with wolves, and the Lands Council is part of a group called the Eastern Washington Wolf Coalition. And these are people who live up in the Kettle Range, who live in every one of those counties where wolves are currently present. And we have some interesting perspective about wolves. I should mention that the Lands Council helped start the Northeast Washington Forestry Coalition, which is one of the longest collaborative efforts in the United States, and we have been working with the timber industry and a lot of local people for over 10 years in order to return forest health to our forests. My main point today is that there are some places where it's almost extremely difficult, if not impossible, to have cows and wolves on the landscape at the same time. The Profanity Peak Roadless Area is one of those areas. It's extremely dense forest. It has had some fires through there. There are no roads. That's why it's an inventory roadless area. And it's very challenging. The cows have to disperse. They literally can't find big enough openings, you know, over an acre to hang out. And so we need to figure out that issue, and I have an idea here in a second. I should also mention that the Colville National Forest, which manages those range allotments, has not updated their either their space or what's going on in those allotments for over 40 years. A lot of things have changed. Blowdowns, wildfires, and wolves have come onto the scene. So a few of us met with the Colville National Forest about a week ago, or 2 weeks ago now, the supervisor, Rodney Smolden, and we proposed an idea that why not combine what we're doing, working on increased forest opportunities, getting logs to mills, and create more forage and even some permanent meadows down lower where there are roads and where there's access and where you could drop the cattle off and not have to have them wander through the thick forest, but they could permanently, you know, have openings. And he said that's a possibility. And so what I want to do is commit to working within our forestry commission and try to find those opportunities, because I think, quite frankly, those remote roadless areas are not a good place for cattle. They're going to interfere with the wildlife that's up there. They're going to be impacted by the wolves who hang up there and eat deer and elk at some level. And so I just want to say that we're willing to, our Eastern Washington Wolf Coalition, who interacts across all those counties in Northeast Washington, is willing to try to take that approach as well to find different and better places for the cattle. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes.
Thanks, Mike. So I just kind of want to second what Mike is talking about. The Colville National Forest Management Plan has been on the table now for a number of years in fits and starts. And Mike and the Forest Practice Coalition has been a real leader in trying to move that along. Everybody's at the table who needs to be there. Our main timber companies, the ski resorts, and the National Forest. So I think this is a real opportunity to get some different kind of preventive practices in place. I'm really pleased to see Mike taking leadership here, because he is well respected in that community.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
And we will move into